Listening to the English language news of Khan, the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation.
It's 8 p.m. in Israel, Sunday, March the 24th, 2024. In the headlines, an IDF soldier is killed in a firefight in Gaza's Shifa Hospital. The IDF confirms forces are operating in the Al-Amal Hospital area in Khan Yunis. In contacts on a hostage release deal, reports that Israel is now willing to release up to 700 Palestinian prisoners in exchange for 40 hostages. Defense Minister Gallant heads to Washington for talks with administration officials that he says will focus on maintaining Israel's qualitative edge, defeating Hamas, and returning the hostages. U.S. Vice President Harris does not rule out consequences for a major Israeli operation in Rafah. The Israeli Air Force hits Hezbollah sites in Lebanon after rocket fire toward northern Israel. Government tensions over the yeshiva draft bill. The weather outlook, light local rain in the north and center through the afternoon. No significant change in temperatures. Good evening. This is Nomi Segal with the news. Staff Sergeant Lior Raviv, a 21-year-old resident of Rishon LeZion who served in the Nahal Brigade, was killed in a firefight with terrorists in Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. He was laid to rest this afternoon in the Rishon LeZion Military Cemetery. First Sergeant Eli David Garfinkel, a Duvdevan soldier who was killed in a shooting attack on Friday in the Binyamin region, was buried in the military cemetery in Rehovot. Since the start of the war, the number of IDF fallen now stands at 595. Defense Minister Yoav Gallant departed for Washington this evening for talks with senior administration officials amid increasingly strained relations between Israel and its main military backer and ally. This over disagreement on the trajectory of the Gaza war and warnings of growing international isolation of Israel. In remarks before leaving, Gallant said his discussions will focus on maintaining Israel's qualitative edge and ways to achieve the shared objective, defeating Hamas and returning the hostages. Gallant, who is traveling at the invitation of his American counterpart, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, said he will also meet with the U.S. Secretary of State, the White House National Security Advisor, and the CIA chief. The visit follows differences that emerged on Friday between U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Israeli leaders over the direction of the Gaza war and Washington's strong cautions against a broad military offensive in Rafah in the southern Gaza Strip. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris says Washington has been clear that any major military operation in Rafah would be a huge mistake. In an interview with the ABC News program this week, Harris was also asked about Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer's recent remarks criticizing Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and calling for elections in Israel.
Leader Schumer was very blunt in his remarks on the Senate floor. He called Netanyahu an obstacle to peace. He's calling for new elections in Israel. The president called that a good speech. What did he mean by that? Does the administration believe that there needs to be new elections in Israel?
Well, I will not speak for Senator Schumer, but we are very clear that that is on the Israeli people to make a decision about when they will have an election and who, of course, they elect to lead their government. That's for them to say.
Do you believe that Netanyahu is an obstacle to peace?
I believe that we have got to continue to enforce what we know to be and should be the priorities in terms of what is happening in Gaza. We've been very clear that far too many innocent Palestinians have been killed. We have been very clear that Israel and the Israeli people and Palestinians are entitled to an equal amount of security and dignity. And frankly, we have been very focused on also getting the hostages out and getting aid in.
Netanyahu appears to just be flat out ignoring President Biden's warning about an offensive in Rafah. Is that a red line for your administration?
We have been clear in multiple conversations and in every way that any major military operation in Rafah would be a huge mistake. Let me tell you something. I have studied the maps. There's nowhere for those folks to go. And we're looking at about 1.5 million people in Rafah who are there because they were told to go there, most of them. And so we've been very clear that it would be a mistake to move into Rafah with any type of military operation.
A mistake, but would there be consequences if he does move forward?
Well, we're going to take it one step at a time, but we've been very clear in terms of our perspective on whether or not that should happen.
Are you ruling out that there would be consequences from the United States?
I am ruling out nothing.
U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris. The IDF confirmed it is operating in the area of a Khan Yunis hospital. The Israeli Army and Shin Bet forces have begun operating on the grounds around the Al Amal hospital in Khan Yunis, following precise intelligence information that terrorists are using the civilian infrastructure for terror operations. The IDF spokesman called on Hamas terrorists to stop using hospitals and civilian facilities as a shield for their terror activity, which harms innocent civilians. Troops overnight launched an operation in western Khan Yunis to dismantle Hamas's terror infrastructure in the area. The IDF said that 40 targets had been destroyed in airstrikes. IDF and Israel Security Agency Shin Bet forces under the command of the 98th Division began an operation in Al Amal, western Khan Yunis, in order to continue dismantling terrorist infrastructure and eliminating terrorist operatives, the military said in a statement. Meanwhile, troops have continued to operate in the Shifa Hospital compound in Gaza City. The IDF and Shin Bet have reportedly killed on the site 170 terrorists. The IDF said 480 of the 800 people detained were Hamas or Islamic Jihad terrorists. Troops have also found weapons and terrorist infrastructure on the hospital grounds. Another two senior Hamas officials were arrested, Hisham Sarsour and Diab Tatar, both of whom are members of the emergency committees that oversee terrorist activity and are responsible for maintaining contact with terrorists on the ground. The head of the IDF Southern Command, Major General Yaron Finkelman, said during a visit to the hospital area over the weekend that the IDF would conclude this operation only when the last terrorist is in our hands, alive or dead. Contacts on a hostage deal and ceasefire. The Saudi network Ashark cited what it called knowledgeable sources as saying the latest round of talks in Doha on a ceasefire and hostage release deal failed after Israel presented what were described as new conditions. There were no further details on that. Meanwhile, another Saudi media source, the news agency Al Alam Al Arabi, reported that the United States was pressing Israel to reach an agreement of a truce of several days. The source said that the sides were close to an agreement on the gradual return of displaced Palestinians to the northern Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, reports this evening are saying that Israel has agreed to a proposal to release 700 Palestinian security prisoners in exchange for the release of 40 Israeli captives. This would be the largest number of prisoners that Israel agrees to free since the Paris Agreement, when at that point Israel was discussing the release of 400 prisoners for 40 captives. The heads of the Israeli delegation to Qatar, Mossad Director David Barnea, Shin Bet Director Ronen Bar, and Hostage Coordinator Reserve Major General Nitzan Alon, returned to Israel last night. The decision to return was made in consultation with Prime Minister Netanyahu. The other members of the Israeli delegation remained in Doha. The prevailing assessment in Israel is that Hamas will respond within 48 hours to the proposals that were put on the table in the most recent round of talks. Mohammed Nazal, a senior Hamas official, said last night that Hamas has already given its response and the ball is now in the Israelis' court. Other senior Hamas officials accused Israel of presenting unyielding positions at the talks with the goal of derailing the negotiations. Reporter Mark Weiss spoke with Gershon Baskin, a political activist and a researcher of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, who was involved in previous negotiations with the Palestinians, including the negotiations that led to the release of kidnapped soldier Gilad Shalit in 2011.
I think there's a chance that we're getting closer to a negotiated agreement. I think that the Americans have played a crucial role here in putting pressure on Qatar to put pressure on Hamas. In my understanding from talking to people involved this morning is that the gaps are still quite wide. We're waiting for an answer from Hamas on the American compromise proposal, mainly on the issue of the release of prisoners. But it seems that we're closer now than we've been before, for sure.
Presumably the final word must come from Yahya Sinwar. He's not exactly easily contactable, in some tunnel somewhere in Gaza. How difficult does this make the negotiating process?
Well, if there was a direct communication, it would be a lot easier if the Israelis and the Hamas were talking to each other and not going through third parties and not having to go through satellite telephones of people coming out of tunnels in Gaza. It would be easy to move the negotiations along, but this is the reality that we're in. I'm sure that the Hamas have ways of communicating with Sinwar. If Hamas fighters can come out of tunnels and shoot RPGs at Israeli tanks, they can also come out of tunnels with a satellite phone and call Doha. This is not a big challenge. It is a question, though, of whether or not Sinwar is actually interested in reaching an agreement at this point, and we don't know that.
The Israeli leadership, both militarily and politically, from the beginning, has argued that the best way of reaching an eventual deal is to continue and to step up the military pressure on Hamas. Do you believe there is a logic to that?
No, I don't. They've been saying that for 170 days, and in my opinion, what the military pressure has done is gotten more hostages killed. It might be now the reality that the threat of a land incursion in the Rafah area is putting more pressure on Hamas. But still, hostages are getting killed every day, and we're in the 170th day with 134 hostages still in Gaza. We don't know how many of them are alive, and a deal needs to be made quickly. I think that there are better ways of pressuring Hamas and getting a deal. The Israeli side needs to make compromises, difficult compromises as well. The most important thing, in my view, is getting these people home.
As far as we know, what we're talking about on the table at the moment is the first stage of a three-stage deal, which will only bring about the release of 40 or so hostages for about a six-week truce in the fighting. The main crux of the matter still remains, correct me if I'm wrong, is that Israel insists the military campaign will continue to what it calls total victory, whereas Hamas is insisting on a total ceasefire before agreeing to release all of the hostages. How do we solve this main issue?
I think that the first thing to do is to get this six-week ceasefire and to bring home as many hostages as possible. Hamas has agreed, apparently for the first time, to include women soldiers in the category of women. This is a breakthrough, I think, in the negotiations as well. A six-week ceasefire may give an opportunity to the mediators, to the international community, to the Israelis and the Hamas, to consider other alternatives to continuing the war. Our end goal is to have the Gaza Strip no longer governed and controlled by Hamas and threatening Israel. And there might be alternative ways to the war to arrive at a situation where Hamas would agree two parameters would enable a different Palestinian authority, a different set of Palestinian leaders to govern and govern both the West Bank and Gaza, and with international assistance, renew a peace process that could lead us forward out of this tragic reality that we're all living.
There was renewed speculation again today, and we've heard this before, that Israel may consider an amnesty for the Hamas leadership if they agree to exile from the Gaza Strip. From your knowledge with Hamas senior officials, do you believe that this is something they could potentially possibly agree to?
I don't think they would agree to it, but I think that Israel should put it on the table. I think the option has to be there and given to the Hamas leadership in Gaza to consider whether or not they would agree to exit the Gaza Strip. My sense is, and I want to you know, put this with a little star above it. None of us really know what Sinwar wants and what he's thinking, even though so many of us speak in his name. My sense of Sinwar is that he is not a person who will surrender, who will not leave Gaza. He will go down dying. I believe that he is of the understanding that he will not survive this war. He's not afraid of death. It's a commandment in his own distorted religious view of Islam to die as a martyr for Palestine, and I think his goal will be to kill as many Israelis along the way with him, hostages and soldiers.
You've heard the arguments, I'm sure, of from some in Israel that Benjamin Netanyahu doesn't really want a deal because any deal will involve such sacrifices from the Israeli point of view that it will bring down his government. Do you believe that?
Well, I think that Benjamin Netanyahu is history in terms of how long his government will survive. But yes, I accept the what a lot of people have been saying, that Netanyahu is putting his own personal political interest ahead of the interest of the country. And that's why we're in day 170 without a resolution to the hostage issue and an end to this war.
Final question then, almost the obvious question. We seem to be now inching closer than we have been before. How do you rate the chances for a deal?
As I said when we started this conversation, I think that the chances are good. I think that both sides want a deal and need a deal now. So the chances are better than they were 2 weeks ago. But still, I spoke to one of the heads of the Israeli negotiations this morning, and I understand that the gaps are still wide. But we should take into account that everything that we hear, everything that's said, is part of the negotiations themselves. We all use information, misinformation, and disinformation as part of the tactics of negotiation. So it's really difficult to know what's really going on in those rooms where the negotiations are taking place. My suggestion is, particularly on a day like today, that we be optimistic and hope that there's an agreement and push our leaders to make an agreement.
Gershon Baskin. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu marked the holiday of Purim with officers from the military police's Erez battalion today, telling them, "We will enter Rafah and achieve absolute victory. We eliminated Haman and we will eliminate Hamas Gaza leader Sinwar." Jordan today airdropped 6 deliveries of humanitarian aid over the northern Gaza Strip. A Jordanian network reported that the airdrop was carried out in cooperation with Egypt, the United States, Germany, and Singapore. Meanwhile, Germany's foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock, is traveling to the region with a focus on the humanitarian aid issue ahead of her trip to Egypt, Israel, and the Palestinian territories. Baerbock said every aid crate sitting on trucks in front of Gaza's border fences is one too many. The UNRWA Commissioner General Philippe Lazzarini claimed today that Israeli authorities had informed the UN that they would no longer approve any UNRWA food convoys to the north of the Gaza Strip. In a post on X, Lazzarini called it an outrageous move that obstructs life-saving assistance during a man-made famine, in his words. Israel has accused the UN Palestinian Relief Agency of staff having direct involvement in the October 7th massacre and terrorist ties. In response to accusation of Israeli obstacles to the flow of aid into the Gaza Strip, the coordinator of government activities in the territories published a photo from Kerem Shalom of trucks waiting for inspection in Egypt that haven't reached the Israeli side. The Post said that the UN must scale up logistics and stop blaming Israel for its own failures. The Post also noted that 142 trucks are still waiting on the Gaza side of Kerem Shalom for pickup by the UN. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said today that Palestinians in Gaza desperately need a flood of aid. He said Israel must remove remaining obstacles to relief and open more land crossings.
Palestinians in Gaza desperately need what has been promised, a flood of aid. Not trickles, not drops. Some progress has been made, but much more needs to be done. Making that happen takes very practical steps. It requires Israel removing the remaining obstacles and choke points to relief. It requires more crossings and access points. All alternative routes are, of course, welcome, but the only efficient and effective way to move heavy goods is by road.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres. He was speaking at a news conference in Cairo with the Egyptian Foreign Minister Sameh Shoukry regarding UNRWA involvement or UNRWA staff involvement in the events of October 7th. Guterres said it is perfectly possible that some Hamas members infiltrated the UN Palestinian Refugee Agency, UNRWA. He said steps were taken against those where there was a credible perception the allegations were true. We'll have that comment from Guterres in a moment.
It's perfectly possible that in any entity and in UNRWA, there might have been infiltrations from Hamas, and we recognized that those infiltrations led with certain credibility to participation of some of these elements in the events of 7 October. We recognized that it took measures. Those that we had credible perception that it was true were immediately separated. We put a team of investigators working hard to detect any other possible source of infiltration.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Turning to the north, Israel Air Force aircraft attacked a Hezbollah sites in South Lebanon today, including a military structure and a military infrastructure after terrorists were identified inside. Over the course of the day, 3 anti-tank rockets were launched toward Shtula and the Ramim Ridge. The IDF returned fire in the direction of the launches. Hezbollah confirmed that 2 of its operatives were killed. The IDF announced this morning that Israel Air Force planes attacked a facility that was used to store Hezbollah weapons in the Baalbek area in eastern Lebanon. 50 rockets were fired into Israeli territory from Lebanon. Some of the rockets were intercepted and the others landed in uninhabited areas. Israel Air Force aircraft attacked some of the rocket launchers that were used in the rocket attack. The official Lebanese news agency reported that the Israel Air Force fired 4 missiles at Baalbek's Al Asira neighborhood. According to that report, 1 building was destroyed and 3 Lebanese civilians sustained light injuries in the attack. Meanwhile, rocket alerts that sounded on the Golan Heights this morning were determined to be false. At the same time, children who were celebrating Purim in one community, Nov, required to run for cover when they were sounded. The Syrian opposition has reported an Israeli airstrike early this morning on an arms storage facility used by Hezbollah and the Assad regime northwest of Damascus near the Lebanese border. Syrian air defense systems were activated in the Damascus area. No official Syrian statement was issued about the report. It's been cleared for a publication that Israeli security forces over the weekend arrested in central El Bira in the Ramallah area a wanted individual suspected of terror activity. A police statement said that members of an undercover unit carried out the daylight arrest of the individual, a senior Hamas member who'd been jailed for several years in Israel for various terror activity. In other news, the Yeshiva draft law. National Unity Party leader, Cabinet Minister Benny Gantz, says his party cannot remain a member of the emergency government if the proposed legislation on the matter, as drawn up, is passed. We are working so that this law will not pass in its current form, he said. It is a red line in normal times, and during wartime, a black flag waves above it. The government is due to be presented on Tuesday with an outline for the Haredi draft law drawn up by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It reportedly does not set a quota of ultra-Orthodox men enlisting per year. It sets the age of exemption from service at 35 and ensures that Haredi men who don't enlist will not face criminal sanctions. Earlier today, Defense Minister Yoav Gallant of the Likud said he would not support Prime Minister Netanyahu's outline for the Haredi draft law and criticized fellow coalition members for refusing to be flexible on the issue of blanket exemptions from the IDF for the ultra-Orthodox community as the deadline to present new legislation draws closer. Gallant again called on the Prime Minister and Cabinet Minister Benny Gantz to use the time that remains to forge broad consensus on the issue of the conscription law. A law that authorized the military service exemptions for Haridim expired in June 2023, and a temporary government regulation that extended it is set to expire next week, after which the military will not be authorized to exempt Haredi young men from the draft and will need to start enlisting them. Meanwhile, the Finance Ministry Budget Division has criticized the framework on the grounds that raising the exemption age to 35 could cause long-term damage to the Israeli economy. Another protest took place last night in Tel Aviv, urging the government to make a deal with Hamas to secure the release of the hostages held in Gaza. Here are two of the participants at last night's rally: Lee Siegel, brother of hostage Keith Siegel, and protester Shahar Moore.
I'm here tonight, like every Saturday night, to speak in the loudest voice I can for my brother, who's been a hostage 169 days in Gaza, speaking to the government to move forward on the deal. Everyone is in Qatar. It's time to close the deal.
We have been in this game for four or five times already, where expectations are getting high and talks are on the way. And of course, we want to be optimistic as possible, and we want to think, we want to pray that the hostages will be released with from these talks. But I want to remind you, everybody, that this has been going on for over 5 months now. And quite frankly, we don't believe that the government is doing everything it's within its power to get the hostages back. So we need the international community to exert power upon the Israeli government and upon all the other sides to reach an agreement, to reach a deal as soon as possible. The hostages have no time.
Separately, thousands of people demonstrated on Kaplan Street in Tel Aviv and at 40 other locations across the country to demand early elections. Police arrested 15 protesters on Kaplan Street. Here are some of the voices from that protest.
And we need a prime minister, a government that we can trust, that will finish this war, that first of all and above all will bring back the kidnapped people. We have a moral obligation to bring them back. And there is no price too high for bringing them back. And we feel that Bibi Netanyahu is not finishing this because it's in his interest that this chaos will go on. And he is sacrificing the kidnapped people and sacrificing the people of Israel. And that's why we are here every week and sometimes more than once a week.
The corrupt government is declining to bring the sides to a negotiating table and close a deal to return the hostages. And we believe that the government has to go because this is the government that led us into the war, that led us to a point of complacency, and will not be able to take us to a place of progress.
Our leadership is isolating Israel from its peers, from its other countries who are as liberal, as democratic as we used to be, in order to for them to stay in power. Then and consequences be damned. They don't care about our well-being. They don't care about us. They don't care about us here. They don't care about our hostages in Gaza. They definitely don't care about what happened in Gaza. And they're doing it, unfortunately, in my name, even though so many of us do not agree to their actions.
I think it's crazy, but they are sticking so strongly to their seats. It's like a glue that you can't take off. So the politics is above everything these days. Unfortunately, and in spite of everything, it's crazy. You would have thought that by now that we would have a new government, but this is not happening. They're so strong politically, and their different interests are holding them together. And it's shocking. It's shocking. But we'll continue with the protest.
Protesters at last night's rally calling for new elections. More news coming up, including a special Purim meal for wounded IDF soldiers currently recovering. But first, Rami Fortis, Chatun Miflatzet, Cat Monster. Taking a midway look at the headlines this evening, an IDF soldier is killed in a firefight in Gaza's Shifa Hospital. The IDF confirms forces are operating against terror operatives in the area of Al-Amal in Khan Yunis. In contacts on a hostage release deal, Israel has reportedly stated it is willing to release 700 prisoners in exchange for 40 hostages. Defense Minister Gallant heads to Washington for talks with administration officials for talks. He says we'll focus on maintaining Israel's qualitative edge, defeating Hamas, and returning the hostages. U.S. Vice President Harris does not rule out consequences for a major Israeli operation in Rafah. The Israel Air Force hits Hezbollah sites in Lebanon after rocket fire toward Israel. Government tensions over the yeshiva draft bill. The weather outlook, light local rain in the north and center through the afternoon. No significant change in temperatures. A special special Purim Seuda holiday meal was held today at Sheba Medical Center in Tel HaShomer for some 200 IDF injured soldiers. The event, which included a Megillah reading, entertainment, and more, was organized by Olamit Wolf, a Tel Aviv-based holistic therapist who's been involved in providing food to soldiers since the beginning of the war. She was involved in organizing similar events over the holiday at Ichilov Hospital in Tel Aviv and the Beit Levenstein Rehabilitation Center. Wolf spoke to us about the initiative.
Actually, we're at Tel HaShomer a few weeks ago, and I was asking different organizations and different members of staff what they'll be doing for Purim, and they said there'll be fabulous people coming in and clowns and people trying to get the atmosphere going. But when I asked them if they had a souda, they actually didn't, and no one had thought about it. And a friend of mine brought it to my attention, there's no souda going on. So we decided to take it upon ourselves, myself and a couple of friends, to put on a souda for 200 people today. We'll also be doing it in Ichilov a little bit later on today. And we got to meet the most incredible boys in the Shikum unit, in the trauma department. They've just been recently injured since October 7.
So tell us about how does one go about this undertaking? It's not entirely new to you, especially since October 7th, but what did you pull together?
Great question. We actually just made this decision a few days ago. So it entailed for this particular Sa'uda to have a Megillah reading. So we liaisoned with the rabbi, the chaplain of the hospital, who's a magnificent person, and we organized live music. And obviously we had to be very sensitive about the music, you know, and sensitive about everything we had to do today, because on one hand we're talking about real trauma, and we're not there just to entertain them, and we're not there just to stare at them, and we're not there for us to feel guilty, for them to feel guilty. It was a very sensitive issue getting the music right, and getting the atmosphere to be mechubad, to be honourable to where they're at in their journey right now. We had gifts. We had an enormous amount of food, very high-level catering. We really wanted them to feel that we're spending money on them and we're just going to make this a really special event. So we had a hot meal, beautiful desserts, and then gift baskets, which also entailed gift cards that we bought, 195 gift cards that could be used anywhere, hoping they want to use it for their own personal hygiene, toiletries, pajamas. And we're very blessed to have a lot of donors that, when I brought it up with them in the past 3 days, were able to raise enough money to put on a really beautiful Seuda Megillah reading today.
Is this a personal private initiative, or are you connected with other organizations?
Actually, I'm not even an organization. I'm just a mother who's had 2 kids in the army myself. And at the beginning of the war, I was trying to think, what can I do on a personal level? And one of the things I love to do, well, I love to take control and try just to help out in any way I can, as nearly every mother in this country. But my personal initiative was to take on cooking for the soldiers, like many other people have done. And we get out hundreds of meals every single week. And I just have, you know, just mothers and fathers driving it to different bases, and basically got pretty good at logistics and found myself doing this every week now, getting meals out to the different bases in the south.
By Excel sheet, by WhatsApp groups, or you have another format?
No, yeah. Brilliant question. It started with WhatsApp groups, and then I just turned to mothers, A, that kept kosher, and for those who didn't keep kosher, taught them how to make their kitchens kosher so that everyone could be participating in this initiative. And now I have about 196 people that work with me and just check in with me every week. And I liaison with the logistics officers and figure out what needs to go where and to get it there in the best and fastest way. And in addition to that, I'm trying to take on a soldier or two that's been wounded and their family need financial assistance, whether it's amputees, and we're reaching the goals. Just put it out there on Facebook, put it out there on all the groups that I think know me and respect me and know that I'm not an organization. Everything I make will go 100% to whatever it is that I'm working on.
So did you have a chance to speak with some of the soldiers at today's gathering?
For sure. I met the most beautiful boys today. There were mainly recently wounded ones, but there were some who were wounded in the past and are still in Shikum, still in rehab. And you see in their eyes, they're obviously just so happy that we're there. I mean, I'm making a point to let them know that we're not going to forget their faces or their names or their needs. I write down every one of them, what it is that they would like, their wish, a wish list. And I've actually come up with a new idea in the past hour what I'd like to do for the next initiative. But their eyes, they're so full of gratitude for us to be there, for everybody to be there. I mean, the hospital is just filled with volunteers. And some of the boys, you know, who are missing limbs, you can see the fear in their faces and the pain in their mothers' faces, trying to be strong and brave for their kids, not to cry. And hopeful that us mothers, us people from abroad, donors, can come and help them and be there for them on this journey they're going to be embarking on.
And you mentioned you're also doing something at Ichilov later today?
Yeah, we're going to be going to Ichilov 4 o'clock, doing something very much similar format for also about 150 to 200 parents and boys and some girls with the same, getting music and music, food, catering, and try to make it equally Sameach as we did this morning.
There is a challenge in these times to feel the joy in light of this. As you mentioned, it's a delicate path to walk. Do you feel that somehow able to navigate
absolutely.
That?
And I think that's so important that you brought that up, because also tomorrow we're doing another one in Bet Levenstein. And when I'm interviewing, whether it's photographers, videographers, musicians, it's actually not so simple, because I don't want an entertainer that they feel they need to be entertained. I don't want somebody who's going to look overly sympathetic. I don't want somebody who's going to look overly joyous. They need to be sensitive. So actually, what I've tried to recruit musicians that are Israelis, younger, that can say, you know what, Achi, I've also been in the army. I know what you're going through. I feel like it's just so important that they understand that we know what they're going through and that we're not spectators. So hopefully I've chosen well with the musicians that I've brought in, especially tomorrow. We've brought in some illusions for tomorrow, and also, you know, even someone who's going to be taking footage, because I thought it's so important to have this documented, that it's done the most respectful way, quietly, that they don't even realize that they're being filmed, although of course I get their permission. And then we have something to show the rest of the world, you know, what's going on. And when they ask us what they can do, it's very clear, you know, what they need to do to help us, you know, to continue embarking on all these amazing events.
So if anyone is interested in helping out with some of these activities, how can they do so? How can they get more information?
Well, I'm just learning how to get a little bit more organized in terms of donations, because it really is about the donations. Today costs a lot of money, and we're very blessed that people want to help. We've been using synagogues also. They've been accepting money from overseas, and they know, you know, who we are and what I'm doing. So they're able to help us with tax receipts. And people know my name, Olamit Wolf, and they can find different ways that they can pay directly to me. And they know 100% of whatever I get is going to go to every cause that I'm involved with.
Olamit Wolf. And Jerusalem, or in Jerusalem, Shushan Purim is being observed in Jerusalem and other walled cities around the country. Tomorrow, a Jerusalem Purim parade, the first in 42 years in the city, will take place. After the move came under public criticism in light of the ongoing war, Jerusalem Mayor Moshe Leon met with representatives of hostages' families and agreed to make some changes to its format. It has been retitled Purim United and will have fewer musical performances along the procession, and the music will be at a lower volume. The Tel Aviv, Yafo, and Holon municipalities, known for their legendary Purim parades, canceled the events this year in deference to families of hostages, evacuees, bereaved families, parents of combat soldiers, and a general muted mood. Thousands of Christians attended Palm Sunday at Jerusalem's Mount of Olives on the first day of Holy Week. Worshippers carried palm fronds and marched from the top of the Mount of Olives to the Old City of Jerusalem. Here are two visitors from abroad commenting on the experience against the backdrop of the ongoing Israel-Hamas war.
I'm here because I love Jesus Christ, and I know there's a lot going on here in the Holy Land, and I'm here to pray for the Jews. I'm here to pray for everyone. It's my love of Jesus Christ why I'm here.
It's very exciting. This is the first time here in Jerusalem. And although there is the war, in my impression, I don't feel any kind of tension. I didn't experience this kind of tension.
Visitors in Jerusalem. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Foreign Ministry claimed that Israel prevented Christian Palestinians from the territories from entering Jerusalem to celebrate Palm Sunday. In a post on the social media platform X, the Palestinian Foreign Ministry called for international steps to ensure free access for Palestinians to their holy capital. After nearly half a year, low-cost carrier EasyJet is renewing service to Israel. A Khan reporter says the airline will initially operate flights to six destinations: London Luton, Amsterdam, Berlin, Basel, Geneva, and Milan. In Eilat, seven people were arrested last night on suspicion of vandalism and assaulting police officers. Police said the detainees, residents, and students who study in the ultra-Orthodox community are suspected of attacking police officers, security guards, and medical staff. Some were drunk. The remand in custody has been extended by 2 days of the Hapoel Tel Aviv basketball fan who is suspected of assaulting a rival fan from Hapoel Haifa after last night's match between the two teams, breaking his nose and causing other injuries. The fan who was attacked was released from hospital this morning. The violence erupted after Haifa defeated Tel Aviv 88-87. Turning to news abroad briefly, in Russia, family and friends of those still missing after an attack that killed more than 130 people at a suburban Moscow concert hall waited for news of their loved ones as Russia observed a day of national mourning today. Events at cultural institutions were canceled, flags were lowered to half staff, and television entertainment and advertising were suspended. The attack, which has been claimed by an affiliate of the Islamic State group, is the deadliest on Russian soil in years. The deputy chairman of Russia's Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev, said today that Russia will target those behind the deadly shooting wherever they are from and whoever they are. Kate, the Princess of Wales, and her husband, Prince William, are said to be extremely moved by the public's warmth and support following her cancer announcement as tributes continue to pour in on today from around the world. After weeks of frenzied speculation on social media about her health and well-being, Kate said in a video message on Friday that she is undergoing chemotherapy for cancer following major abdominal surgery. A spokesperson from Kensington Palace said that the prince and princess are both enormously touched by the kind messages from people here in the UK, across the Commonwealth, and around the world. In response to her message, they are moved by the public's warmth and support and are grateful for the understanding of their request for privacy at this time. There's been a global outpouring of support, including from U.S. President Joe Biden. It is also for King Charles III, who's also undergoing treatment for cancer. Neither Kate nor the king have revealed what type of cancer they have or the stage at which it is being treated. Israel's most famous historian, Yuval Noah Harari, has written a new children's book, Unstoppable Us, Volume 2, Why the World Isn't Fair, focusing on the power of stories. In front of a live audience at New York's 92nd Street Y, he spoke with author Ian Bremmer about the new book.
The thing that I took away most directly when you're writing for kids about why life isn't fair is you're saying it's all about stories.
Yeah.
Explain what you mean by that.
Much of it is about stories. Yeah, that, you know, since I was a kid, I was extremely concerned, especially about the issue of war. I live in Israel, I live in the Middle East, there is constantly war, and you want to know why there are so many wars in the world. And many people tell you that people fight, humans fight, for the same reasons that other animals fight. It's just natural. You fight over territory, you fight over food, the same way that chimpanzees and wolves and lions fight. And it took me many years of researching history to understand this is just not true. Humans don't fight over territory and food. They fight over imaginary stories in their minds. If I look at the present terrible conflict tearing apart my region of the world. It's not really about territory, not objectively. There is enough land between the Mediterranean and the Jordan River to build houses and schools and hospitals for everybody. There is no objective shortage of land. And similarly, there is no objective shortage of food. There is enough food to feed everybody. And this is true of other conflicts in the world. You look at the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Russia doesn't lack territory. The last thing they need is more land. And so why do they fight? People fight over the stories in their mind. Like I work in Jerusalem in the Hebrew University. And you know, it's one of the most fought over places in human history. It's hard to understand why. It's not such a great place. You know, I mean, it's a very ordinary place. You walk around, it's just, you know, you have stones and trees and cats and pigeons and people. Just like any other place.
I mean, it's on the water, the land is pretty good.
The land is not good. You can grow olives or something. There are no oil fields. There are no gold mines. Nothing. But in their imagination, people think, oh, this is not a stone. This is a holy stone. This is not just any place. It's full of angels and gods and saints and prophets. And they fight over this. You know, my husband just went 2 days ago here to the Apple store and bought these new Apple glasses.
You let him do that? Seriously? It's the beginning of the end of your relationship, obviously.
Well, that's one prediction that we'll see what will happen with it. But, you know, people invented it thousands of years ago, this technology. Yeah, like they just call it a different name. It's the Holy Book. Like you walk around Jerusalem with this holy book and you see it's full of the augmented reality of angels and gods, and this is what people fight over. I just read a couple of weeks ago a book that Sari Nusseibeh, a Palestinian philosopher, wrote a couple of years ago, and he said that in context of the fight over Temple Mount and the Dome of the Rock, and the Holy Rock on the Dome of the Rock, under the Dome of the Rock. And he wrote that Jews and Muslims, armed with nuclear weapons, are about to commit one of the worst massacres of human beings ever over a rock. Over a rock. And it's absolutely true. I listened to our Prime Minister Netanyahu, and he says this is the Sela Kiyomenu, the rock of our existence. And, of course, the rock is just a rock. But the stories that we tell about it make it so important that people are willing to be killed, to kill and be killed in millions.
So structurally, what upsets you more, nationalism or religion?
I think, first of all, we need both. In order to construct large-scale human societies, you must have these stories. They are not necessarily bad. Stories are tools. You know, it's like a knife, that you can use the knife to murder somebody or to save their life in surgery or to cut salad for dinner.
And they create order in large societies.
So without religion, without nationalism, we can talk later, for instance, about the link between nationalism and democracy. I think that there are exceptions, but in most cases, nationalism is a precondition for democracy. If you don't have a strong national community, you cannot have a functioning democratic system. Every state is made up of many different tribes. If you don't have strong patriotic national feelings that unite the tribes, you cannot have a democracy, because every tribe will just fight for its own interests without caring at all. And you can have a democracy, a dictatorship under such conditions, but not a democracy. Again, like with every story...
And is religion a precondition for anything on the positive side?
I don't think it's a precondition, let's say, for democracy, but it has done throughout history a lot of good as well as a lot of bad things. And the question is, what do we do with these stories? Like with nationalism, you have the good side of nationalism is when it's about love.
that the essence of nationalism should be a feeling of love, of a special care about a group of people that makes me, for instance, you know, pay my taxes honestly so that people that I never met in my life will get health care. This is the bright side of nationalism. The dark side is when it turns from love to hate, when people think that to be a patriot means to hate foreigners or minorities or whatever. And it's the same with religion. Religion doesn't come down from heaven. It's created by humans. You look at the history of every religion, Judaism, Islam, Christianity, Buddhism. People can make terrible things out of it, and they can make good things out of it. It's in our hands.
Yuval Noah Harari. Before the weather and return headlines, a bit of music. Here's Yuval Dayan, Shirak Techayich. Just smile.
אני יודעת שיש מלאכים בעולם מחכים לי בדרך. לא צריך למהר, הכל יסתדר. זה יבוא עם הזמן. יש דברים חשובים באמת, זה בסוף בפרטים הקטנים. לפעמים לא צריך לדבר, גם בשקט מצאנו מילים. שרק תחייך כל החיים, זה כל מה שאני מבקשת. בית קטן, גינה לילדים, תאמין אני מאושרת. תדע שאני לתמיד עלינו שומרת. ואתה עוד תראה הדברים מעצמם התחברו עם הדרך. הפחדים יפחדו שלא תיפתחו, זה יבוא עם הזמן. יש דברים חשובים באמת, זה בסוף בפרטים הקטנים. לפעמים לא צריך לדבר, גם בשקט מצאנו מילים. שרק תחייך כל החיים, זה כל מה
the weather outlook calls for light local rain in the north and center through tomorrow afternoon. No significant change in temperatures. Tuesday and Wednesday will be gradually warmer. Thursday, hot for the time of year. The temperatures forecast for tonight and tomorrow, Jerusalem 8 to 14, Tel Aviv 13 to 20, Haifa 12 to 17, Sfat 8 to 12, Tiberias 11 to 21, Beersheba 10 to 19, and in Eilat from 12 degrees tonight, going up to 23 degrees Celsius tomorrow. Taking another look at the news headlines this evening, an IDF soldier is killed in a firefight in Gaza's Shifa Hospital. The IDF confirms forces are operating against terror operatives in the Al-Amal area in Khan Yunis. Defense Minister Gallant heads to Washington for talks with administration officials. He says we'll focus on maintaining Israel's qualitative edge, defeating Hamas and returning the hostages. U.S. Vice President Harris does not rule out consequences for a major Israeli operation in Rafah. Israel has conveyed it is willing to release 700 Palestinian security inmates in exchange for 40 hostages. The Israel Air Force hits Hezbollah sites in Lebanon after rocket fire toward Israel. Government tensions over the yeshiva draft bill. The weather outlook, light local rain in the north and center through the afternoon. No significant change in temperatures. That's the news. Join us tomorrow night at 8 p.m. on Kan Reka, the foreign languages channel of the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation. Watch our 2 p.m. news flash on the Kan English Facebook page. Find us on Spotify, Twitter, or write to us at kanenglish@kan.org.il. Together with sound engineer Michael Oshvang, this is Nomi Segal wishing you good evening and shalom from Jerusalem.